This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
At some point in our lives, we've all done things to fit in. But then we realize the importance of being ourselves. Introducing the distinct Audi Q5, an SUV all its own. Its LED DRLs stand out wherever they shine. And with Audi Quattro all-wheel drive and available Audi Drive Select, it delivers performance that no one can imitate. So be yourself. Visit your Audi dealer to test drive the distinct Audi Q5.
I'm David Jones. Come see the largest selection ever of Audi A3s, Q5s, and Q7s. Audi exceptional luxury performance at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at GeraldJonesAudi.com.
Well, Peter Kessler is a golf historian, the voice in the game of golf. You've seen him on Golf Channel. You've heard him on the PGA Tour Network. It's always a pleasure to welcome Peter Kessler back to the Augusta Golf Show. Hi, Peter.
I love to hear the sound of your voice, and I'm always delighted that you're there with it. Thank you, pal.
Well, it's great to talk to you, and I want to talk to you about the Ryder Cup and everything that took place last week. Let me start with this. For your consideration, the Ryder Cup is better every time the Europeans win.
Oh, absolutely. It's funny. I remember in 2001, right after 9/11, the Ryder Cup, of course, got canceled, so then it was moved to even-numbered years, and it was going to be and turned out to be the first year of the Dunhill Links, which is on this very week. And you play the old course, and you play Carnoustie, and you play King's Barnes, and if you're one of the low 20 teams, you get to go ahead and play on the Sunday, and there's 168 teams. And one year I made it with Thomas LeVay. He missed the cut, but we made the cut, and he was the only pro to play on Sunday who missed the cut individually, and I made him $25,000, and he wouldn't give me any money because he couldn't find anything that said I had turned pro. But I was sitting with Johann Rupert, and Johann Rupert owns Knightsbridge, which is Dunhill and Cartier and all kinds of luxury brands, and the two big Dunhill championships, the ones in Great Britain and one in South Africa. And we were sitting with a group of Europeans who had just, in the last go-around in 99, had won the Ryder Cup. And I was talking to him, and I said, it's always better when Europe wins, because I said, remember, first of all, nobody ever heard of the Ryder Cup until the mid-1980s, unless you were a golf historian. And if that's the time you first caught on to it, it was perfect, because it was absolutely beginning its march to as exciting an event for team play in a sport that doesn't really have team play that you could possibly imagine. And so, you know, what happened was that American domination of the first 50 years started to get overturned and has been overturned since that time in 1985, when Jacklin's team won for the first time after tying in 83. And I said, because it creates more interest in the game, I said, it gets the Americans fired up for the next time. It's more important to Europe, it seems, than it is to the United States. I said, so it's just a perfect confluence of factors for Europe to win this thing every time.
So when you hear somebody say the Europeans want it more, do you think the Euros want it more than we do?
No, I don't. It's just that when you win something all of the time and you seem to be having a particular knack for doing so, and you're really enthusiastic throughout the whole proceedings, you would be lying if you didn't say afterwards, this is really important to us. That's why we got up. That's why we tend to play better golf than we might have on an average week. Yeah, it really is important to us. The Americans, for ages and ages, really until Tony Jacklin came along in 1967 and won here, and then won the Open in 69 and the U.S. Open in 1970. It's been an American game since 1913, when Francis Ouimet won the U.S. Open in a playoff. So, and they felt belittled, and they felt ridiculed, and they felt like second-class citizens. And even the players' equipment was terrible. The shoes were bad before Tony Jacklin signed on, and the bags were awful, and the clothes were awful. And so it's become important to them, and they've proven to be good at it. And when you're good at something, it's important to you.
We're talking with Peter Kessler here on the Augusta Golf Show. So have we lost perspective on its importance or lack thereof? I mean, how important is it to the scheme of things, Peter?
Well, not very. I completely agree with Jack Nicklaus about what this is. He calls this an international goodwill exhibition. And it is. I mean, you know, one of the original idea of it, when Sam Ryder actually thought of it, you know, in 1926, even though the first formal one was 1927, was he wanted to popularize the game. And just like, you know, the exhibitions in America that Harry Barden gave in 1900 were set up for the same purpose, to send him across the country to a game that had just been introduced to this one and let him demonstrate how good it can be if you are proficient at it, and how much fun it is to watch the ball in the air, and imagine how much fun it is to try to make it go up into the air. So, you know, it's a huge, huge thing in terms of its importance as a goodwill exhibition, but it's not a golf tournament, and you don't get a win. And, you know, unless it's somebody who's already a World Golf Hall of Famer, this isn't going to put you over the top. It's not going to put Westwood over the top. But, you know, it's not going to do that. You have to have a Seve record and a Faldo record, and then the Ryder Cup is G, and he also played super in the Ryder Cup. But it's the majors, and it's the 50 wins in Europe that Seve had. Those are the important things. This is supposed to be fun, and Europe kind of gets that more seemingly than we do, which is hard to believe.
All right, well, that's exactly the opposite of what I was going to add. Having said what you said, so you don't think that we, the Americans, have a better grasp of what it all means, because they seem to take it very seriously. We seem to have issues with that. It's as if, you know, they realize deep down inside, it doesn't really mean anything, so it doesn't really matter if we play well or not. Do you think the Americans have a better grasp of what it all means?
No. I think they act in some ways a little bit spoiled, if you will. You know, when you go to the Ryder Cup as a player, there's so much other stuff that goes on that you wouldn't have to deal with at the U.S. Open, where you'd go home and cook dinner and go to bed. Here you've got stuff every night, and you're changing clothes. I remember Tiger, you know, for the different days, used to put on the wrong blue pants. By accident, he put on the striped ones instead of the checked ones. So much stuff, so many interviews, so many team meetings for an individual sport. And you're not playing as a team. It's not like you're lining up on one side of the football. You're all over the place, all over a golf course. And some of the guys are sitting, you know, and watching on television. So, you know, it's a completely different thing. So it just seems to me that the Americans don't like the extra stuff. They don't seem to have a particularly good attitude. And we are way, way overthinking the whole process about who you put with who. I mean, you know, they said to Joe McCarthy, the manager of the Yankees, you know, you're a genius. And he said, yeah, I'm a genius. He said, first I write down Ruth, then I write down Gary, and then I say, go play good, fellas. And then I'm a genius because they played good. And, you know, so I don't think the Ryder Cup captain has very much to do with anything. And nobody knows how anybody's going to play on any given day, including when you first walk onto the tee. Nobody knows. So that's why this business of projecting and predicting is so insane, because nobody knows anything. There isn't any information. But I think the Americans don't seem to have a good attitude about it. And I feel like they feel like they're put upon. And I feel like they got micromanaged here. And I just think this is just lay off and let the guys decide who they want to play with. Furyk shouldn't have said six words all week.
Does any of this loss belong to the decisions that Jim made?
Well, you know, first, of course, the major premise is you don't know how anybody's going to play, but there are certain situations where you say to yourself, is this a good move? And, you know, and the is this a good move one came up when he decided to put Phil in the foursomes or alternate shot on the first day, when Phil had been playing, you know, really ragged golf of late, hitting it sideways, hadn't played well since he won in Mexico, wasn't feeling good about his game the whole week leading into it. And then you put him into a much more intense, much higher pressure situation where, at least if he hits one sideways, the other guy has a good chance, if they pick somebody who's a straighter hitter than Phil, that the ball's going to be in play and Phil can play the iron shot and then off you go. So that was a really bad move. I mean, even Phil should have, you know, put a halt to that. You know, no, you put me with best ball, even if I have to sit till tomorrow. The rest of it, I don't think you can really second guess because, again, since nobody knows how anybody's going to play, you know, there's very rare instances of teams working and on a long-term basis. But one of the great ones, of course, was Seve Ballesteros and Jose Maria Olazabal. They both were what I think of as inspirational rather than plodding golfers, that emotion is something that really worked for them and enthusiasm somehow worked for them, like sometimes anger works for Tiger. And that inspirational kind of play in a pairing of players is pretty much the only exception to the rule of nobody knows how anybody's going to play, because somehow they managed to have lifted it up one more notch. I mean, I think their record was 11-2-2 as teammates. I mean, that's just completely astonishing over a really long period of time. So I don't think the pairings thing, other than the Phil mishmash, makes any difference whatsoever, because the players still have to just play really good golf, and they essentially hit the same number of fairways as the Europeans did, just slightly less, but they didn't fare as well from that point forward. So I don't think there was a setup issue. These guys aren't stupid. You play a golf course once if you're a world-class professional. You had all 10 of the top 10 playing in the Ryder Cup. You play a course once, you go, okay, I got this. And, you know, a lot of guys have won major championships showing up for the first time on a Monday. But if you're really smart like Tiger Woods and like Jack Nicklaus, you show up way early and you play a whole bunch of rounds. And the fact that the Americans had six competitive rounds on this golf course, and European players, including the last two winners who were also on the team, had 210 competitive rounds on this golf course, I feel like that gave them an advantage.
What did you make of the dust-up between Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth?
Well, I think it's amusing. We need something to happen here. Everything is so boring. All these people are so boring. You know, Brooks is so boring. Dustin is so boring. Justin is so boring. I mean, they're so boring. And so, you know, a little dust up is good for the game. I mean, you know, I don't understand the Patrick Reed, and certainly not nearly as well as you do, living there, but I don't understand this incredible estrangement from his family on stuff that didn't seem like it was deal-breaker kind of family stuff. And his wife's a bit curious to me. You know, she's always got that hat on, and she's a little curious about the way she looks, and I don't mean it in necessarily a negative way, just sort of a... Yeah, you wonder what's going on there a little bit, and he's sort of an oddball, and he's not likable, and, you know, the TV camera really doesn't like him, you know. It makes him look like he needs a shave, looks like he has a few extra chins, it makes him look like he's in a bad mood. So I think it's terrific when there's a dust-up. I'd like to see some people come to blows. Give me some action. Let's liven this thing up already.
We're talking to Peter Kessler here on the Augusta Golf Show. Do we just find it so incredibly hard to accept that the Europeans just play better golf than we do in that situation? You've said make more putts. We just seem to find that so hard to accept.
Yeah, I think that what's happened is that, you know, it almost reminds me of what Tiger went through until this year with major championships in the past several years when he's been able to play, which was he would come to the first tee of a major on the first day, and he looked stressed out already. And that first swing was always going to be short and fast, and you knew he was going to block it to the right, and it was short and fast, and he'd block it to the right, and he'd make a bogey, or like at Shinnecock this year, he'd make a 7 on the first hole, and you never get to recover from that. And I feel like that stress resides within the American squad and has for quite some time since it became clear that Europe was, in fact, actually dominating the proceedings over a now, you know, three-decade period of time. And so, you know, I think that they come there knowing they're supposed to win, knowing they're supposed to relax, but they don't quite relax, and you get micromanaged, and it's a different environment. I just think that there's a stress factor from minute one, because if you're expected, because of on paper you have the better team to win, you you want to just be able to play your game, but the circumstances of the week and the pressure that builds up over losing the 2 years before, even though in this case Americans won 2 years before, but there have been so many European victories that the occasional, you know, 08 and 16, I think, are the last two, you know, of this century that the U.S. has won. So, you know, Europe's used to winning, the U.S. is used to losing, and they're used to being the favorites, and that's a lot of stress, and you can't make golf happen. And Europe, as the underdog, is more relaxed. They know they have a great record. Everybody seems to get along nicely, just the right amount of fun. And they know the Americans are going to be stressed out, and they are. And it starts almost instantly, even though the U.S. jumped out to a lead the first morning. People forget that. After the first, 25% of team play, they were in the lead 3-1. And then, of course, the whole thing went south.
Do you think, Peter, the Ryder Cup team would be better served if Tiger and, to a lesser extent, Phil went to the next captain and say, you know what, not us. We've been more of a distraction than a asset. Take us out of the equation. Phil kind of will be 49, so he's probably out of the equation. But do you think that would be something valuable for them to do?
Really depends on how they're playing, because on an objective basis, in my view, they were reasonable picks for the team. Certainly Tiger, after finishing, so beautifully at the Open Championship and then, of course, coming in second at the PGA Championship and, moving up from, 1,200th in the world to, 20th. I mean, he was competitive and he had moved up the Ryder Cup points. So he was an obvious take. Phil's a mixed bag because they say the players really love him and he's infectious and, you never know with Phil. He could have played great at the Ryder Cup because Phil's whole career has been built on two or three good weeks a year. That's why he's never won a season-ending award. Not the money, not the tournaments, not the stroke average, not anything, not ever. In all since 1991, never a season-ending award because his whole year is always two or three good weeks, which is true of most players, even some really terrific ones like Phil, who's an all-timer. But so I think that the decision this week on Phil was poor and should have gone right to your point, which is, I'm playing like a pig right now. Don't put me in alternate shots. I'll let you know if I want to go out. As far as Tiger's concerned, you got to put him out. He just won the Tour Championship, one of the grittiest performances we'd seen in ages. But, yes, if it came to the point where they were both playing iffy, then they probably aren't going to get selected for the team anyway in the next go-around at 44 and 49. So I don't think we'll have that issue again. But this week, Phil could have dropped in and said, don't put me out in alternate shots. And Tiger should have said, play me once a day. And if they didn't say that, then that was problematic, but goes to your point of what they could have done, but which probably won't come up again in the future.
I always appreciate the time, Peter. Thanks for taking the time to do this.
Great to be with you, my friend. I love the sound of your voice. I really appreciate your friendship. I love the show. People say the nicest things about you, so I'm just always delighted to be in your company.